Let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom. And you may proceed.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Joel Bacon. I represent Gage County. This is an insurance dispute case arising out of the Beatrice 6 case. As I'm sure the court's well aware, Gage County faces federal jury verdicts in excess of $28 million related to the Beatrice 6 matter. When the Beatrice 6 were being investigated and prosecuted in 1989 and 1990, EMC was Gage County's primary insurance carrier. It provided Gage County with three layers of coverage, a CGL, or commercial general liability policy, a limited form of errors and omissions policy known as a linebacker policy, and then an umbrella policy which provided some drop-down primary coverage as well as excess care coverage above the other two policies. The CGL policy provided coverage for, among other things, false imprisonment, false arrest, malicious prosecution, the sorts of things that if you're a political subdivision like the county are usually going to involve your law enforcement officers. It also had a professional services exclusion that did not define the term professional exclusion or professional services. And the question for the court today is whether or not, under the in the context of that particular policy provision, was law enforcement a professional service? Now, as I mentioned, the policy did not define professional services, and this court has never considered what the term professional services means within the context of a professional services exclusion. It has considered that term in a different context, in the context of a malpractice policy. And in answering the question, the district court looked to those cases, in particular this court's decision in the 1968 Marks case. And in that case, what was at issue was a medical malpractice policy, and there was a medical technician who was trying to sterilize equipment, and instead of putting water in the beaker, put gas in the beaker, started a fire, and damaged property. And then that claim was tendered to the malpractice carrier. And the question for the court was that particular act of trying to boil water something that arose out of the medical profession? And in the course of answering that question, the court said, in the context of the policy provision presented here, a professional act or service is one arising out of a vocation, calling, occupation, or employment involving specialized knowledge, labor, or skill, and the labor or skill involved a predominantly mental or intellectual rather than a physical or manual conduct. And the district court latched on to that language and used that to answer the question in this case. There are a series of problems.
Where did we get that language?
That language, the court borrowed that language from it. There's a block cite from a whole series of other cases from other jurisdictions. The district court relied upon that particular language. There's several problems with that. One is that this court in Marks specifically indicated this is not a one-size-fits-all definition that's supposed to be used everywhere. It used the language in the context of the policy provision presented here, which indicates the court was specifically talking about that particular context. And there's a clue there that we should look to the context surrounding that that language when we see it in a policy.
Within the contract language.
Yes, and the district court failed to do that here. There are three pieces of context that indicate that the parties here did not consider law enforcement to be a profession that rose to the level of something that would involve professional services. One of those I've alluded to already, which is that the policy itself, the CGL policy, provided coverage for things that if you're a political subdivision, your source of concern, your source of liability there is going to be your law enforcement. False arrest, false imprisonment, malicious prosecution. Those are the types of torts that are going to involve law enforcement almost always if you're a political subdivision. And it's worth noting the declarations page indicates that a good chunk of the premium here was specifically took into consideration that Gage County was a political subdivision.
What's the relevant of the next layer with errors and omissions?
Yeah, so the errors and omissions policy.
How does that reflect on our understanding of the underlying CGL?
You would anticipate that if the parties contemplated that professional services, undefined term in the CGL, was broad enough to cover law enforcement, coverage for that would get picked up elsewhere, that there would be dovetailing coverage as opposed to some type of overlapping coverage. There would be dovetailing coverage, so now it's going to get picked up in that errors and omissions
policy. But that's ascending layers. You're going to start with the CGL.
Yeah. They're all related in this. Yeah. You would anticipate them to be going together.
Okay.
And so you'd anticipate, so malicious prosecution, false imprisonment, false arrest, those types of torts would get picked up in that next layer of coverage. That doesn't happen. It doesn't cover personal injury, which are what those torts are defined as. And so they're specifically not included in the definition of what's being covered. And so that's another indication that shows the parties did not intend professional services to extend to law enforcement. That's also reinforced by the fact that EMC did not provide separate standalone law enforcement liability coverage that we could have purchased for an additional cost. There's no the only testimony on that is that was not provided for EMC during this time period.
But why is that relevant? There's just no such a product?
There wouldn't have been any available from EMC, and they're our primary carrier. You would anticipate that if parties were thinking that
it's only provided as a layer. It's not a standalone product.
No. There is no indication that it might have been possible. Perhaps we would expect that if it wasn't going to be covered under either the errors and omissions coverage or the CGL policy, there might have been a separate product out there, and there's no indication that there is, at least that was offered by EMC. That gets me to the third and maybe the most important piece of context, which is the umbrella. And the umbrella is interrelated with the policies, and this court has indicated that when you have interrelated umbrella coverage and primary coverage, you can look at the coverage as a whole to look to what terms might mean. And when we look at the umbrella, it's a little confusing, there's two exclusions that are overlapping, both of which indicate that the umbrella will only provide coverage for professional liability or professional services, and excluded occupations, which is a different term, excluded occupations if those things are covered in the underlying policy. So it excludes any type of primary coverage that it might provide, and it only provides excess coverage if those things are covered under the underlying policy. And there's a definition in the umbrella of professional liability, and it's an open-ended definition and includes a non-exhaustive list of types of things that would be professionals. And then you have an excluded occupations definition, which is separate. And listed on that excluded occupations list is law enforcement. And if the parties had contemplated that law enforcement was a profession, there would have been no need to list it separately on the excluded occupations list. And so what that shows us is we have a interrelated policy that defines law enforcement as something other than a profession. And you put those pieces of context together, instead of using a one-size-fits-all definition, you put those pieces of context together, and it shows that the parties in this particular case, with this particular policy language, thought that law enforcement didn't rise to the level of being a profession.
Appley seems to make a distinction between professional services and a professional.
And I have
An accurate distinction?
No, that is, if you actually break down the term professional services, professional is an adjective. It means arising out of a profession. So anytime you have that term, there's two steps that have to happen. You have to have a categorization step. Would we categorize this occupation as a profession? So that's step one. Step two is, look at the specific act. Did it arise out of the training and skill that makes that profession that makes that occupation a profession.
So it's your contention that Marks only deals with that second step.
And that's going to be true any time you have a malpractice policy. That's also true of the RW v. Shrine case that the district court relied upon, which was also a medical malpractice policy and involved the question of whether or not a pediatrician and sexually abusing children was engaged in a professional service.
So how do you determine that first step of what is professional?
Well, I think step one is what I just indicated. You look to the context of the policy and see if it can answer that question. If it doesn't, I mean, then to the extent Marx has any relevance to this question, Marx has been eliminated by this court in subsequent jurisprudence in dealing with the term professional services in the statute of limitations on professional negligence.
We've talked about professional in a negligent statute of limitations context. How does that definition fit in with this? This definition.
It's the exact same term is used in both the statute of limitations and in this particular policy provision. And the court initially used language in Marks to define what professional services means within the statute of limitations, and then subsequently rejected it in the Tilley line of cases, which indicates that it's no longer good law. And I would suggest that if I had to go to a client and say, you don't get the benefit of the statute of limitations because you weren't providing a professional service, but you also don't get covered because you were providing a professional service, that there's going to be a disconnect with any client.
Could you say, but you're not going to be covered because of the acts?
If you got to the next step, but I think you don't get to the next step here because we're talking about the same amount of time. May I finish my thought?
You may.
I don't think you get into that next step here because we're talking about, these are typical law enforcement conduct. The question is whether or not does law enforcement rise to the level of being a professional.
Melissa's prosecution could also be county attorney conduct. Is that correct?
It could, but that claim was thrown out here, and there was actually a conspiracy claim that went to the jury. And
but under the policy, is law enforcement, or excuse me, is an attorney declared a profession?
I think an attorney would be a profession.
Okay, so how does that, if we're talking about malicious prosecution, but we say it doesn't include attorneys, how does that coincide with your argument?
The individuals who are engaged in the malicious prosecution here were the law enforcement.
Well, they were alleged it was a county attorney as well.
Yeah, those claims
was dismissed by the court.
Dismissed. There's also, in theory, a conspiracy theory that might have involved him, but that went away as well.
Well, how would there have been a coverage against the county attorney?
The county attorney himself would not have had coverage, but there would have been coverage for the law enforcement officers.
Would the county attorney have had prosecutorial immunity of some form?
Yes, that's what he was dismissed on in part. There was a conspiracy theory.
Is that a reason why you might not be concerned about coverage for the county attorney?
That's one reason, yeah. I think I'm way out of time now, so I will wrap up unless there's any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Bailey, good morning to you.
Good morning. Karen Bailey for the Appley Employers Mutual Casualty Company. The Beatrice 6 litigation alleged civil rights violation out of law enforcement's investigation and arrest of the Beatrice 6 plaintiffs, as well as prosecution by the county attorney's office. The investigation that formed the basis of the Beatrice 6 litigation required the skill, knowledge, and specialized training of the law enforcement officers who were defendants in this case.
Can I just take you right to the insurance policy?
Yes.
Is it your client's position that this county had no coverage for its law enforcement officers' actions?
Yes. It is. And as Mr. Bacon described, there were three policies that EMC provided during the 1989 and 1990 policy. That was the CGL policy that had this professional services exclusion. They had an umbrella policy that had not two exclusions, but it had one exclusion that included both professional liability and excluded occupations. Those two definitions combined to make one exclusion, which clearly excludes coverage in this case. The third type of coverage was a limited form of errors and omission. One thing that's not present in this case is a specific law enforcement policy. There are those available. I believe the record shows that EMC did not actually provide those types of policies in 1989 to 1990. There are times that people can, or entities can go out to different companies and get insurance from various companies, but in this particular case, there was not a specific law enforcement policy that EMC issued.
I need to try to understand exactly where these limits are. I know that in small counties, the sheriffs also run their jails, so does that mean that there would be no coverage for the jail as well since it had been ran by the county sheriff?
If it falls within the professional service exclusion. And it's hard to answer yes or no because without knowing the specific facts of what's alleged, were those parties performing something, rendering or failing to render a professional service? And that's really the main issue on whether this exclusion applies in this case.
So is your position that law enforcement can never be a professional or that it can be under certain types of activities?
It's my position that under the Marks case, which we believe is the controlling law on the definition of professional services, that law enforcement could be an occupation, it could be a profession. It doesn't matter as long as it's what act they're performing. Marks continues to say that we must not look to the title or character of the party performing the act, but the act itself. In this particular case, you have police officers, investigators who are interrogating suspects. They're manufacturing false evidence. that is the act itself. And under Marx, we believe that clearly shows that these law enforcement officers were conducting a professional service.
Is that malicious prosecution?
Yes, it would be. That would fall within that as well.
So it doesn't matter if law enforcement's an occupation or a profession. It's just the service they're providing that is at the heart of the case.
Absolutely. There's no cases. Marx has been distinguished by Gage County, by the Chile line of cases, which is specifically related to statute of limitations cases. And that in those line of cases, there's a two-step process. The first, you have to say someone is actually a professional. The second step is saying they're conducting a professional service. There's nowhere in the Marx case or any cases that have used Marx for the purpose of interpreting an insurance policy or an insurance exclusion that actually requires you to say this person is a professional, and they have to be a professional in order to be performing a professional service.
Okay. Appellant contends that step one was skipped because it was a medical professional that did the negligent act. So they said it's just assumed within the case that step one's met. So now we focus on step two. What was the act itself? Was it a professional service, or was it just some ministerial responsibility of pouring something into a sterilizer and cleaning it? So does step one matter? And if so, how do you get over step one, determining that law enforcement is professional or not professional?
None of the other cases that have followed Marx or used Marx for the definition of professional services have ever said you need to say someone's a professional. We've got cases that have someone who's conducted ear piercing, hair removal services, operators of pilot cars. I mean, those things are falling within professional services because, again, the court looks at the act itself and not the title of the character performing that act, which is key to this exclusion.
At the time Marx was decided, though, wasn't the Marx definition used for both of the steps, as your opponent has characterized it? Up until Tilly, the way you determined if someone was a professional or not, fell within a profession, was to use the Marx test, correct?
It was part of that test, yes.
And we've since moved away from that for determining whether a given job qualifies as a profession.
But that's for a different analysis regarding the statute of limitations with 25222.
But if it's the same word, and we give words in insurance policies their ordinary and expected meaning, and we give words in statutes their ordinary and expected meaning, what justification would there be to treat them differently?
In Marx, it was a malpractice policy, so I think they gave them the benefit of the doubt that it was a profession. But again, any case since that time has moved away from requiring that two-step. There's no case that I've seen in interpreting a policy provision, including CGL policy language or exclusion, specifically a professional services exclusion, that has required someone to be a professional in order for the professional services act to apply.
Would you distinguish the understanding of professional services in the insurance contract context from the statute of limitation context by virtue of the proposition that within the insurance context you look at the words throughout the contract to see if you can divine the expression? In other words, you've got a CGL, you've got an errors and omission, you've got an umbrella. How does that inform us going back to what is professional services, if at all?
If a policy isn't, or if a term is not defined in an insurance policy, yes, you can look at the policy as a whole. It's our position that the professional services exclusion is unambiguous. While it's not specifically defined in the CGL policy, multiple courts have used professional services exclusions without definitions. They've actually relied on the Marx definition as far as what constitutes professional service. And I think that's key here.
There's nothing about the other provisions of this policy that makes you doubt your proposition.
No, there's not, because when you look at the umbrella policy, which is excess to the CGL policy, you have one exclusion that includes professional liability and excluded occupations liability. Those two definitions combine to make what essentially is the professional services exclusion. So those two policies, even though professional liability is defined as including a non-exhaustive list of certain professions, the excluded occupation definition includes others, and those two definitions together combine to exclude what I think is identical to what would be in the CGL policy. And again, it's I think they're not inconsistent, and the case law from Marx and all the cases that have relied on that definition have said that that term is unambiguous. And when a term of a policy is unambiguous, it's improper to look at extrinsic evidence, such as Gage County's arguments that, you know, there should have been a specific law enforcement exclusion. You know, there was X amount for the premium. Well, there's nothing in the record as far as what that premium was for. And again, that's extrinsic evidence that we think is improper to look at in this particular case. Interestingly, in the Western World case, which is the case that I have found that is most on point, they actually relied on the Marx term when looking at a professional services exclusion related to a suit against law enforcement related to the investigation. It was actually an assault and a battery that led to the wrongful death of an individual. In that particular case, again, the plaintiff seeking coverage said first, well, the policy didn't have a specific law enforcement exclusion, so the professional services exclusion should not apply. The court believed that the broadly worded professional services exclusion was effective to preclude coverage for law enforcement. Second, in the Western World case, the plaintiff wanted the court to bypass the traditional exercise of contract interpretation and proceed directly to extrinsic evidence to decide the meaning of professional services. Again, the court noted in that case that that offended the cardinal principles of insurance law because you cannot look at extrinsic evidence when a policy exclusion is unambiguous. Similarly, Lansing Community College is another case that I think is on point. Those are the only two cases that I have found that involve law enforcement and the professional services exclusion. What's interesting is both of those courts found that that exclusion was unambiguous, and both of them denied coverage, and they said it applied to law enforcement. And we'd ask the court to affirm the district court's ruling in this case.
It's clear that the policy covers false arrests, detention or imprisonment, and malicious prosecution in the CGL policy, correct?
Yes.
If that doesn't apply to law enforcement or prosecution, what exactly is that covering?
And it would cover things if, and that's difficult to say, because every claim that's made, you have to look at it on a case-by-case situation.
Give me an example. What would it cover?
If there's a county court clerk, a janitor, somebody who accidentally put someone in a closet because they think they stole, something like that might be false arrest or imprisonment.
If the treasurer dependent. Would have imprisoned somebody.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go back to other cases.